We are the Nonprofits. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Day. My co-host is Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
Producer Russell Glasser.
Hello.
And our engineer, Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
And some of the coolest music around.
Yeah. We ran that. That's a bit of music we used to use a lot for our opening music, and sort of a little blast from the past. Battle Without Honor or Humanity by Tomo Tokoyatsu Hotai from the Kill Bill soundtrack, and probably somewhere else before that, but that's where I know it from.
From Anum Hotep.
How is everybody?
Good.
Just fine.
You guys did a great show while I was gone. Thank you.
Thank you. How was your vacation?
It was fun. We went to the San Antonio, the Fort Worth Zoo.
Awesome.
That was cool. And then we went to a aquarium in Dallas, and we went to a farmer's market in Dallas and brought home a bunch of fruits and vegetables.
What
cool.
A blast.
And stayed at a hotel that turned out not to be as nice as advertised.
Aww.
The Atheist Community of Austin is a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. We have weekly meetings at 11:30 a.m., Sunday mornings at Romeo's. Now, I've been announcing for a while that it had changed to a different place, and I've just recently discovered that that was wrong.
Huh.
So if anybody ever tried to meet us for a Sunday morning meeting at some other place and nobody was there, it's my fault entirely. There was just some discussion of that, and somehow I thought it had been decided when it hasn't. Romeo is at 1500 Barton Springs Road, except for the third Sunday of each month when we have our lecture series. This month's lecture is on August 20. The speaker will be Jeff Jones, the leader of the new CFI community here in Austin. Jeff will be talking about opportunities where CFI and the ACA can work together. The lecture starts at 12:30 p.m. at the Austin History Center at 9th and Guadalupe. Lectures are free and open to the public. ACA Happy Hour takes place at Ninfuzz on Highway 183 every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Again, all this is in Austin, Texas. For more information, call our voicemail at area code 512-371-2911 or visit the website www.atheist-community.org. You can participate in our show while we are broadcasting live, which is every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time. For instructions on how to do that, visit our website, the show website, www.nonprofitsradio.com.
Well.
And I have a big thing to talk about.
So, is that your recent journey?
No, not the trip.
Okay.
You mean
okay.
This morning?
Yeah.
This morning. Yeah. This morning to talk about.
Okay.
Did you have something?
No.
Before I start?
Go for it.
I went to a church.
Oh, so you're church goer now.
Well, see, I was was a few weeks ago, Matt and
well,
Russell.
We already
and
did that,
Jimmy.
So
I know,
you're just jumping
that,
on the bandwagon.
I know. I'm a follower, clearly. But the reason I went is because I was at the local cool lefty counterculture theater chain here in Austin, the Alamo Draft House, and picked up this flyer for something called Swap. And, sadly, it wasn't what I thought. There was no actual wife swapping going on at this church. It stands for Science and Wisdom's Alignment Project.
Okay.
Let me read a little bit from their flyer. It is time to acknowledge our common ideals and use them to transform our world. Current and future generations will refuse any religion that is inconsistent with facts and out of step with current conditions.
Boy, that's strangely
it's
naive.
All of them. Sounds like a good start, though.
It's the Science and Wisdom's Alignment Project invite all people of every faith and background. Recognize that the facts and beauty of science are the complement to and not the adversary of faith. Compare the common ideals that are clothed beneath our various fabrics of faith and viewpoint. Create fertile ground for cooperative possibilities. So,
Wow.
This sounded sounded reasonable. I checked this checked into this church. It's a very liberal church. It's Presbyterian, very liberal left-wing Presbyterian church here in Austin, not far actually from where I live.
Mhm.
And in fact, they made a bit of news in recent years by accepting an atheist into their congregation. I don't know this guy personally, but I've heard about him. He's a UT professor, and apparently his view is that he actually wants to accomplish stuff rather than fight with Christians all the time. So he allied with them mainly on social issues.
They accepted him? Liberal churches actually screen people out?
Well, I mean, there is an issue when you you're a member of the congregation and you openly say you don't believe that the God exists.
I guess.
That's what I'm talking about. So they have a website, but which I don't know what it is, and I had trouble finding it. It's not listed on their flyer, but it's St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church.
We've had discussions before about how, once you're on the rolls of a church congregation, they never let you go, because they want to claim they have as many members as they can, so that they can...
Right.
Talk like they're this big, powerful organization.
And that apparently happens a lot. But
doesn't seem that hard to be an atheist and get into a church.
You're saying he could have been a believer, and then become an atheist and still been on the rolls.
No, they're not actively pushing people out.
Oh,
they're,
okay.
They're happy
but,
to
I mean, this was apparently somewhat controversial. Yeah. On their website, they have essays from the pastor and from this atheist talking about this particular issue. Apparently, they each got flack from their side. So anyway, so I thought, since it's so close by and it's just on the morning of a show, I'd go down there and find out what the hell is going on, right? And
it seemed
pretty cool. But I did have one question that I really wanted to find an opportunity to ask, which is, it looks like what you people are saying is that you're going to accept the findings of science...
Right.
And work your beliefs around that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do, though, if, hypothetically, at some point in the future, science definitively disproves the existence of your God? Right? I mean, what if we finally did figure out, what the base original state of the universe was and how, according to entirely natural laws without no supernatural input, conditions that they are now naturally followed? Right?
Right.
That would pretty much be a knife through the heart of God. What if that happens? Are you guys prepared to accept where the implications of where the evidence leads, no matter what? Or are you just posturing so that you don't look like morons? That was my question. So,
probably phrased a little better, but yeah. Nicer.
So,
include the
yes,
moron
Matt.
Word.
Can I interject for something that's kind
yeah,
of off
do.
Topic for just a second?
Yeah.
On the off chance, the guys in the chat room already know this. We've got some great folks. Every time we broadcast live, we've got the chat room up. It's irc.wickedwire.net, and the channel is Pound Nonprofits. They're in there. They know what's going on, and that is that we're hosting this live stream from one of my second machines, and we just got flood attacked. Right at the start of the show.
Yeah.
So much so that we almost didn't get to the Stream Ripper connected in time. But I'd just like to point out that nobody got dropped, and Woo-hoo. Whoever the guy was who was doing the flood attack, we grabbed his IP address. He's on Southwestern Bell, I think out of Plano, based on the way the IP resolved, and we've sent an email to the abuse@email address for Southwestern Bell. So for the guy who tried to do that, if you're listening, my kung fu is way fucking better than yours.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right. Good for us. Okay, so I went down there, and it was in a church, and in the sanctuary is where the conference was happening, and they had a guy, Alan Davison. I don't know what his deal is, where he comes from, what his whether he has some title or background, or I have no idea. But he did the welcome and introduction, and here's the things that he said.
Mm-hmm.
He made these claims. that religion is what used to hold our cultures together. Right?
Uh-huh.
They provided a shared beliefs that, you know, made everybody be the same so that they'd all be on the same side.
All right.
You can make that argument.
Yeah.
It didn't hold, like, the world together. It held little tribes together against each other. But, yeah.
Right. But he didn't say that, but he made a more blanket statement. Then he said that that's not the way it is now, and that secular institutions are holding our cultures together, and that they are inferior at this task.
Really? Did he offer any rationale?
No. No justification whatsoever.
Just
a blanket
statement.
I think probably when asked, he would point to any of a number of social ills and say, those are proof that these secular institutions aren't doing their job. Never mind the fact of the study that showed that the more religious a culture is, the more they tend to be overrun. But yeah, overrun and dysfunctional. Yes, Matt.
To me, it seems like he just completely switched context. He starts off talking about how religion has held our cultures together.
Yeah.
But he's talking about religion holding individual cultures together and not all cultures together. And then when he talks about how secular institutions are holding our cultures together, he's talking about how different cultures are interacting. And basically, he's not said anything different. You've still got little cultures, which are in some cases governed by their religion and in some cases governed by secular reason. But the bonds between those cultures are secular in nature because religions can't meet. They are inherently divisive.
Well, he thinks they can.
He's nuts.
He thinks they can.
But, well, he's wrong. But, I mean, like, to the extent that we've got these issues that we're aware of that we seemingly didn't have a long time ago, The world is much more interconnected now. We're more aware of each other, and there are a lot of different cultures that are needing to deal with each other now. And, you know, there are a lot of issues surrounding that, basically.
Yeah, but the horrible thing is, we're more connected. You might be able to argue we're more aware of each other, but we're certainly not more educated about each other.
Well, we are.
Americans don't know crap about foreign countries.
Yeah, but but if you compare us to, like, you know, a bunch of Spanish Inquisition guys.
Well,
we are more educated than we used to be.
Yes, of course, more educated. Sure,
yeah. Secular institutions.
We're more expected.
What?
We're more expected.
Yes, that's true.
We are perhaps less well educated than we were, say, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Very possible. Yes.
All right. So, so he's made these blanket statements, and then concludes by saying that he fervently hopes that our culture will change again, and you know that religion will go back to being the glue that holds our culture together, and that the result of that will be that religious wisdoms will be taught once again in public schools.
Of course.
Now
this was
he
a liberal
did.
Church, huh?
This is a liberal church. Now, he did make a distinction. He said no particular religion should be taught.
Sure.
But that religious wisdoms should be taught.
Sure.
Which is, you know, what the fuck difference does that make as far as, like,
for my religion?
It's that generic theism should be taught, or generic supernatural beliefs should be taught, never mind the fact that there's people in our culture that don't believe it. Okay, so that was just the introduction. Yeah. Then the first speaker was Bekir Algan, PhD, from Austin Yoga. What his PhD is in, but he mentioned having designed some buildings in Austin and Dallas or something. So I assume it's in
engineering
or architecture. Right.
So this isn't like a Kent Hovind style PhD.
PhD. He is an engineer, so it's probably an engineering degree. But it's a real PhD that has nothing the fuck to do with the subject, okay? But he wasn't brought in as an engineer. He was brought in as a yoga guy. So he starts his presentation by walking everybody through a little yogic hypnosis stunt, which really bothered me. I mean, he didn't say, I'm now going to hypnotize you all, but he did make everybody sit a certain way. Well, asked everybody to sit a certain way, and breathe a certain way and clear their minds in a certain way and basically prepare themselves to simply uncritically accept yep. whatever the hell was about to come out of his fucking mouth.
Right.
Which was this. He started off almost immediately, like a few sentences into his talk, he was attacking the practice in science of verifying one another's research by repeating the experiments. He attacked that.
Wow!
Practice. You know how he attacked it?
How?
Science shouldn't do that?
He attacked it by saying that and people listening to the show won't be able to see the hand gestures, but he basically said, that makes it the almighty experiment, and he did this waving hand gesture as if scientists are glorifying experimentation beyond what it deserves. We're just talking about verifying that other scientists are not completely nuts. That's all we're talking about. This guy
making sure that their experimental protocols are appropriate.
It really annoyed him that experimentation is considered important.
Well, of course.
In science.
I'm not going to go into any of the buildings he's designed. Hell.
And then he started. He said, science doesn't really understand things, it just names them. And his example was water. Science doesn't really understand what water is. They call it H2O. And that is not an understanding of water.
Wow.
It's just a label. And now, having made the claim that all science does is label stuff and not actually understand it, he went on to try to exploit that as a weakness in science to be filled by spirituality. Because, of course, spiritually, you actually understand things.
So what was his spiritual understanding of water?
He didn't explain.
Right, he didn't have one.
He's a fucking liar. He did make another... Yeah, no, it was just complete bullshit, hand-waving, trying to pry a hole open in science so he can inject his big supernatural dick.
But he couldn't pry a hole open, so he made one up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it is true that science does come up with terms for things, sort of essential if you're going to fucking talk about them.
And it does a hell of a lot more than that. Good.
He made this other analogy, which I thought was a valid analogy to illustrate an issue where, you know, just having a word for a thing is not enough. You do have to actually think about what that thing is, and that is the difference between soldiers and terrorists in the current war. He made a very valid point that, you know, we call our troops soldiers because they have official uniforms, and then treat the enemy unofficial combatants or whatever the hell they call them differently just because they don't happen to have uniforms, and that's dumb. Perfectly valid point. Nothing the fuck to do with science.
Right.
Science is all about understanding what those actual differences are.
Yep.
Okay. So then he said went on to say some more crazy shit. He said, if you're going to believe something, he quoted somebody who said something to the effect of, I don't have the exact quote, the things worth believing, most worthy of belief, are those things that that transcend space and time. By which I figured out later what he meant was, and this is not necessarily crazy yet, things that are true at all places and at all times. Those would be universal truths.
Yeah, that's not transcending.
I know. I know, but that's what he meant. He's a crazy yogic douchebag, so, you know.
Idiot, right.
I'm trying to explain, you know, anything like a valid point in the midst of all his bullshit, what that point was. Okay, so then he accused science of not transcending time, but only transcending space. Because what science... Hang on.
Right, go ahead.
I'm glad I didn't bring you with me, Dennis, because you'd have been laughing in the pews.
I would have freaking died.
Because science's job is to find out things like, you know, natural laws. that are true everywhere throughout the universe.
Right. Yeah.
Never mind the fact that right now there's, like, actual, you know, investigation and into clues that that might actually not be true, that in some parts of the universe the natural laws might be operating differently.
But those are experiments.
But not time, because it's Discovery's Raw was changing. You've heard this old one, about science, right?
Yeah. Right.
Science is no good because it's Discovery's change all the time. And he pulled the figure 10 years out of his ass.
Oh, what? Everything changes in 10 years?
Well, see, now, probably you couldn't pin him down if you asked him whether he meant that everything changed. But enough. But he right. he talked as if everything changed every 10 years.
Unlike religion, where if they're wrong once, they stay wrong forever.
Right.
Hang on. So he made this. It's, and, you know, of course, I wanted to ask him, but it wasn't question and answer time yet.
Right.
I wanted to ask him, you know, how long have we known there was a planet Venus? Is it still there? Has that changed? I mean, that's over a century. That wasn't part of his bullshit argument.
Right.
So then he goes, ancient spiritual wisdom is good because it does transcend time. By which, you know, you translate that to, it's always right.
It's dogma, yeah.
Always, yeah, right.
Oh, God.
So,
but you can't tell that it's right.
Yeah. But somehow, while saying these two things, even though it's bullcrap, right?
Right.
He seems to be saying here that science... The science is right everywhere, but only for a while. And spiritual wisdom is always right, but not right everywhere. He never said that.
Right.
If he had said that, he would have... If he said that spiritual wisdom only transcends time and not space, then he would have... made a, you know, concocted this relationship between science and religion
right.
that you could have worked with. But he didn't do that. He never listed any shortcomings of
wisdom.
Spiritual wisdom.
Right. He doesn't think there are any.
Therefore, once again, he's simply slamming science and propping up religion. So, so then he goes on... yoga. He wanted to tell everybody why yoga was so good. Yoga is good. Here's why. Because
I like mine with strawberries.
Because the brain, the mind, is so complex and so busy and so active and so difficult to master.
Uh-huh.
But your joints, like your shoulder joint, has only so many degrees of motion. So if you move your thoughts out of your brain and into your shoulder joint, then it simplifies all of your thoughts.
Obviously, some brains are more active than others.
I think he's moved all his thinking to his coccyx. Yeah.
But astonished
me. Thoughts are simplified, all right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is a pure appeal to wanting, even taking the crazy yogic bullshit out of it, right? Because you don't actually have any neurons in your shoulder joint.
In your coccyx.
It's nothing but a pure appeal to people not wanting to have to think as much.
Right.
Right? So think down here in your shoulder joint where it's a lot simpler. So then he went from that. His point was yoga is good because it limits your degrees of thinking. And then,
wow!
And then he said, in engineering, there's this thing, this concept of tolerances, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
right. You want
now? He's moving on to stuff that he actually understands.
Oh, supposedly. Oh, but does he?
Which is interesting because in religion, there's this thing about intolerances.
He said, in engineering, there's, you know, if you're designing some building and there's you know, it has certain, like, tolerances for weight, right?
Okay.
Or material strength and stuff. And that it comes down to these numbers, hard numbers, that below this is not enough and above this is too much. And this range here is acceptable, right? And then he quoted some other guy I never heard of. who says, well, nothing in real life is like that. Now, if all he meant was that you know, reality is more complex than mathematical abstracts, then sure, right? No problem.
Mm-hmm.
But this was his way of jumping into the topic of fuzzy logic. Why? I don't know! Because he didn't explain a single thing about what fuzzy logic had to do with anything. He didn't say
he uses that when he built his buildings.
Well, yeah, but he didn't go from fuzzy logic to here's more things wrong with science. He didn't go from fuzzy logic to here's more things that are right about ancient spiritual wisdom. And he didn't go from fuzzy logic to here's how science and spirituality can work together. I don't know why the hell he brought this up. Matt.
Well, he is a yogic master and has achieved the nearly impossible ability of being able so flexible that he can stick his head up his own ass.
Yes.
Okay, so then, but I guess this is where he wanted to go. Well, that's, okay. Where he wanted to go from this was to logic. Because now he wanted to have take a shot at logic.
Right.
And say that logic is bad and wrong and we shouldn't have
and
that
so
either.
Faith should
except
be the
for
thing.
Except for fuzzy logic, which he apparently likes.
Right.
Logic is bad. He said if you're really if you're just really, really logical, that doesn't make you a good parent. It makes you a really bad parent.
What?
Because children aren't logical, and therefore, if you're very logical, you won't be able to deal with your kids.
What? He thinks we'll go does not compute. Child poop in diapers does not compute.
What the hell is he? So then he went from children don't understand logic to telling the audience, I kid you not, he told the entire group of people who turned out, who, by the way, I didn't mention this.
They sucking it up?
They had these flyers at, like, the hip, you know, hangout for counterculture kids in Austin.
Hmm.
Not a one of them showed up. Unless you want to count me, and I'm too old.
All oldies?
Yeah, it was all gray-haired and middle-aged people.
So the good news is people who think like this are going to die soon.
Yeah. Sadly, yes. But he told them, to their faces, you won't remember what I've said to you today. And so the details of what I'm saying are not important. What is important is that it sounds good. He literally freaking said that to them.
You know,
translation, you are all morons and I am merely manipulating you.
You know, people who care about whether the details are right actually do things like writing stuff down so
like
that you
I
can
did.
Go and refresh your memory.
This is all in my palm.
To get this guy's name and tell people to look into those buildings he
Bekir
worked
on. Algan, Bekir Algan.
God. If you know he had anything to do with a building that you're
I'll tell
in,
you something else.
Get out now.
I'll tell you something else about this guy. He spent an awful lot of time hyping himself.
I hate that.
And,
wow.
And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if there was a certain amount of license taken in his claims of what he has accomplished. But anyway, I don't know that for a fact.
Can I take us on a sidebar for a minute before you continue your story? Because I hadn't originally brought any news.
Uh-huh.
But when you talked about about disregarding science, and particularly about the fact that this guy was some sort of engineer or architect or something, I
what
remember...
What the hell is wrong with engineers anyway? It's always engineers.
Yes. I remembered a story I'd seen in Feringula earlier this week that I had to bring. Or that I just now printed out.
My Ferengula got infected one time. It was really bad.
This is another one of those religion can't lose stories. It starts out, this is in, I guess, Birmingham, Alabama. Had things gone as planned, up to 500 people would have been crowding into the Cedar Grove Methodist Church near Thorsby today, celebrating a job well done in the do-it-yourself construction of their new house of worship. But instead, an 80-foot span of the new church's roof sits in a heap in the sanctuary floor right where those hundreds would have congregated. Guess what they said? I'm sure you know.
It's a miracle that we weren't in the church.
Yeah. Thank God nobody was hurt.
I bet it was constructed by that guy.
Thank God nobody was hurt, Pastor Jeff. Oh, it gets better, though.
Oh, no.
Pastor Jeff Carroll said he chose to let it come down on a Thursday evening when nobody was there.
Oh, that's
Carroll said he focuses on the positives and plans for rebuilding, but questions linger as to who or what is to blame for the cave-in. The congregation and volunteers designed and built the new church, apparently without filing plans or gaining approval from local state entities.
Wow.
Carroll, himself a home builder, said he was not aware of any requirements and remains unconvinced that a government body should have a say in how a church is built.
I agree.
If the st-
I agree.
You say, let them go right ahead.
Let them build the churches however they want.
That's what Kent Hovind did.
Maybe some little cave-in on a Sunday. That'd be good.
He says,
oh, come on.
If the state and church are separate, I don't understand why they think they've got jurisdiction. Well, that's why.
We're trying to save you from your own moronic asses.
It reminds me of that little hand game that you did in the kid. It was like, here's the church, and here's the steeple. Open the door. Look at the fucking roof laying on the ground.
Yeah.
Look at all the timbers.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just so poetic because, you know, these people who have this paranoia of anything that involves government in every way. No, those regulations are there for a reason. It's to make sure your church doesn't fall down.
And kill you all.
Right. Of course, God helped to prevent people from being killed. But if God was a little more on the ball...
Yep.
Yeah, maybe he should have, like, inspired some of them to, like, build it properly or get the proper permits or invite...
So I was reminded of that because that's what happens when you throw out the requirements of science because of some petty dislike of verifying stuff.
Uh-huh.
That is a beautiful article.
It is.
Because, you know, building inspectors are the rough equivalent of, you know, kind of like peer review. Or another science, having a building inspector come in and look at the roof, he might have been able to tell them, you know, you forgot to nail it. I don't know. You know.
But to Christians, he's Satan.
And Neutron.
No, Elmer's glue does not work on a project this size.
Neutron Jack in the chat channel pointed out that God tried to kill us, but he missed.
Right.
Nice aim.
I think their face in the building would have held it up.
So if you recall, our yogic master was talking about how because people like stuff that sounds good and don't want to think so hard, logic is insufficient.
Right.
Notice, excellent, his attack on logic is based purely on
nicely
people's abilities, not on the validity of logic.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I thinking about this afterward, it seems like you could make an identical argument about nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Getting all the vitamins that you need is complicated and hard, and you have to eat stuff that maybe you don't like. So you shouldn't. So you just shouldn't care about vitamins.
Right.
That's the same kind of argument.
Yeah.
It's just too hard. It's the Barbie, approach to life. Okay, so yeah.
Is this guy's talk over at this point?
Oh no, he's going
no.
on.
Oh god,
he ran over.
Of course,
he wasn't run over. He ran over.
People were wishing the roof would fall on him. Yeah.
He said that. Judging things and organizing your views about stuff is a manifestation of ego, and the ego is just a shield.
Oh boy!
We shouldn't judge stuff and organize.
We shouldn't analyze anything.
And I'll skip ahead here to something he said at the end. He criticized our culture for us being too specialized. Used to be, in the old days, that everybody could do everything that there was to do. Yeah, when we fucking lived in caves.
Right.
And our lifespan was 30.
And even then, I'm betting that's just not true. I'm betting some cavemen were recognized at being better at some things than other cavemen. I bet you fucking anything.
Right.
But because But because he's in the middle of this sustained attack on thinking clearly about stuff, he has to go on to attack people focusing on certain areas to be particularly good at.
Right. Now, does it strike anybody odd that he's complaining about that and is a PhD in something?
I don't know what he's a PhD in.
Well, whatever it is, he's focused on that, hasn't he?
You know, piled higher.
Is he also an astrophysicist? Is he also...
I don't know.
Is he everything?
That's a damn good question.
Or is he a
freaking
hypocrite?
Oh, I see your point, yeah.
Don't know. Yes.
Every time I hear one of these guys talk about things that, like this good old days view of the world, I always want to ask them, exactly what point in time are you talking about? Because as far as I'm aware, throughout recorded history, and even with the inferences we've made about pre-recorded history, you've got specializations. You had, you know, cavemen who were the hunters, and cavemen who gathered plants, and cavemen who did the cleaning and cooking. You know, those specific types of things were out there. But any time in recorded history, even in the Bible, different people did different jobs. There were different...
Yeah, I don't know what the hell this was all about, but...
This romanticized
was everybody the Pope?
They thought this was so important, they had to have him be their first speaker.
Of course,
they talked him up a lot. There were like two introductions for him before he got up.
Yeah, of course, if you're talking about recorded history, that's obviously going to be the case, because the people who do the recording are literate.
Yeah.
And being literate at one time was a very specialized thing to be. If you want a really long view of history, you kind of can't do better than Jared Diamond and with Guns, Germs, and Steel, where basically he kind of makes the case that before people specialized, it was because all their energy was devoted to finding enough food to keep them alive all the time.
Right.
And it was only when we figured out how to actually stockpile food and grow it ourselves efficiently that people started being freed up to do things like think of newer and better ways to live.
Yeah.
And it was those specialists that moved us forward out of basically primitive, you could die at any minute if you don't starve to death kind of culture.
Well, Yogi Algan disagrees with you.
Well,
he thinks we need to go back to whatever kind of culture we can have when everybody is able to be good at everything there is to do.
Wow.
He pretty much said so. Okay, so he wrapped up. Oh, God. He wrapped up telling this little story about the king who wanted to know whether who was more important to his kingdom. Was it the Sufis, who were the spiritual people, or was it the Gnostics, who were the learned people, according to his story? I already, my eyebrow goes up and says, is this historical? So he tells us, okay, here's the story. So the king invites the Gnostics to a big dinner.
Right.
And they come trooping in, and he says, are you guys really, do you think you're like the most important people in my kingdom? And they say, oh yes, it's very important to have the learning and the knowledge and the understanding. He says, okay, fine, sit down. And he feeds them their feast, only he equips them all with gigantic cutlery, like spoons bigger than somebody's head and giant forks and things, and the Gnostics struggle with this stuff and aren't able to understand it, and wind up not being able to eat their meal. Right?
Why didn't they just say,
so then,
yo, king, can I have a smaller
spoon? I don't know. Apparently, if you're the implication already is that it's the stop trying to know things argument, right? If you know too much about stuff, then when you encounter simple little goofy things like spoons and forks that are too big, you'll be completely puzzled and unable to make any kind of decision. So then the Sufis come in, and they come in single file, and they're stepping in each other's footsteps as if they're all really just one person. And the king asks the one in front, are you really, really important to my kingdom? And the Sufi in front says, well, you know, I don't know about that, but I think the guy behind me is really, really important. And then the next guy says the same thing, and the next guy says the same thing, and they all basically dodge the fucking question. And
right.
The last guy says, I think the guy who's the most important is somewhere else. So they sit down, and they get the big cutlery, and they immediately start feeding each other with the giant cutlery because they're able to maneuver it to where they can feed one another with the giant spoons and forks.
See, I thought I knew what was coming. I figured he was trying to point out that, you know, these knowledgeable people were confused by the large cutlery.
Yeah.
And then these more wise people sat down and just ate with their fucking hands. That makes a lot more sense if you're going to do it. But
no.
They mystically knew how to use the large cutlery to feed each other.
So this story
is
completely freaking stupid.
Are you sure they
stupid.
Were giant spoons? Are you sure they weren't, like, really long spoons? Cause that,
he described them as giant spoons.
Then I think he screwed up the story.
I think he screwed up the story,
enough.
Too.
Certainly, I agree with you all. It's massively dumb. You know what else it is?
What?
It has exactly the structure of a Polish joke. Right? It's a completely concocted, made-up situation to put two different kinds of people in, and the one that you don't like comes out as an utter moron.
Right.
Not because it's likely that they would really behave that way, but because that's the point of the story. He told a Polish joke about people that actually bother trying to have knowledge about stuff.
Right.
How many yogic masters does it take to tell a story properly?
Well, more than one, apparently. So at the end, there was a question and answer session. And there was one question. And my partner asked it.
Yeah.
Good.
Immediately, the hand went up. And it's the question was, look, you keep saying that ancient spiritual wisdom is timeless and true always. How do you explain how long we had slavery? Right?
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
And he completely fucking dodged it. His response was, people who are racists, they're racists because that's an assumption that they've made about people that they've had for a long time and that they find it difficult to get over it. The fucking question! Dude, you are the representative of ancient spiritual wisdom trying to tell us it's always good, every time, everywhere, that is its strength, right? You got busy attacking science for not being true every time, everywhere, because scientific discoveries change, some of them. But you claimed that ancient spiritual wisdom is good because it transcends time, it's true forever.
Right.
And here is a piece of ancient spiritual fucking wisdom that we know now is crap, and your job is to explain it. Dodged the damn question.
It's in the Bible.
Yeah. So, so we got out of there. I said there was a break scheduled, I turned and said, "If you had enough of this, I've had enough." We said, "Yeah." Here is what else they had on the schedule. Avril Seal, a Baha'i writer and editor, with his presentation, Fractals, the Patterns of Physical and Spiritual Creation. I'm sorry, I could not sit there and listen to some dipshit trying to mystify fractals. Then another break, and then
John... Have you ever talked to a Baha'i, by the way?
No.
Baha'i are these people whose spiritual belief is every religion is right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Except not having a religion.
He is a dumbass. John Bloom, Buddhist astronomer astrophysicist, on The Astounding Universe, Return to the Mystical.
Well, if you can't even parse the title of the talk... I mean, that's going to be difficult to deal with.
Apparently, if
Is
you're
there
an astronomer
somewhere
and you find
a
the universe really astounding,
was dropped?
That's the same as justification for mysticism.
Oh, wow. Good.
So, anyway, that's all that we were able to stand.
The first talker.
We got the hell out of there.
Yeah. Now,
I'm absolutely freaked out by this because...
Was the audience sucking it up?
Pretty much, yeah. There were a lot of knowing smiles and nodding.
Oh.
A lot.
How vomitous.
Plus, you know, really, they knew who this guy was and where he was coming from when they invited him. It's clear that they did.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So,
And nobody else asked a question.
And nobody, well, nobody else asked a question, but then it had run over, so I'm not sure whether, you know, he became so terrified by having an actual question that they broke it off, or whether it was because they were trying to get the next speaker on with his with his crap about fractals. But see, now, I went into this, having read their flyer, thinking, okay, these are people who are trying to accept both science and their religious beliefs, and they're willing to set aside ancient mystical superstitious wisdom in order to accept the findings of science. That's what I thought.
Right, that's what it said.
And so my question was going to be, well, what if science eventually just proved your God didn't exist? Then what, right? How committed are you to this, really? Only to discover they're not committed to that at all. As far as they're concerned, the way to make science and religion work together is to simply crap all over science.
Right, make it religion.
No, he didn't want to make science religion. He wanted to destroy science.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
He just said, you can't be verifying each other's experiments, conclusions by repeating the experiments. You can't be using logic, because nobody likes that. You can't be, your science is no good because it changes all the time. All this crap dumped on science to just push it out of the way and let the religion through.
Yeah.
That's what I discovered was going on in this extremely liberal Christian church that's trying to bring science and religion together.
Right. And they want to start teaching this crap in school.
Yeah. And I had no idea that it would get this freaking crazy. And, you know, check out the titles of the other presentations. This guy was not unusual in a way that he wanted to just, you know, get rid of logic and reasoning and just mystify everything.
The reason that this church isn't considered liberal is because all the speakers weren't talking about Jesus.
Apparently.
That's the only way in which it's liberal. They allow people to actually talk about spiritual wisdoms and things that aren't directly tied directly to Jesus. So
they're still involved in it.
So they're up for pseudoscience.
Matt?
And this kind of goes back to what we've talked about before, about fundamentalist Christians, liberal Christians, moderate Christians, whatever else, and how there's still a danger in the fact, number one, that they're still using the same book. But from my point of view, what we're seeing in a lot of these liberal churches, and what we're seeing here, and I hate to use one example as kind of an indictment of all of them, but in reality, they are still in the religious mindset, and they have rejected the fundamentalist branch of their church because they realize that that is an abomination, that this, you know, we should not be supporting these ideas of stoning people and slavery and killing homosexuals and whatever else. And they're desperately searching for some way to justify their belief in this incredibly complex modern world, and so they'll have a bunch of speakers in. And it doesn't matter what those guys said, it doesn't matter what religion they were from, it doesn't matter what kind of frou-frou spiritual nonsense they spewed, those people were going to lap it up as long as it didn't contradict what's fundamentally in their minds. As long as it allows them to maintain their beliefs, it's fine. And if it sounds like it makes sense and it feels good, then it must be good. And that's why, you know, while I appreciate some liberal Christians who stand up for separation of church and state and who support evolutionary theory being taught in schools and all these other really good things, there's still a problem there. And that's because they're latched on to this mindset that has them compartmentalize their beliefs, not critically examine things, and it promotes the willingness to accept other nonsense that's thrown at them because they've got to keep that little safety zone.
In fairness, even though these people describe themselves as liberal Christians, they don't sound to me like the kind of people who would be champions of evolution. They don't sound like the Barry Lynn, Kenneth Miller category of Christians.
That amazed me. I think you're right. They don't. And that just floored me. I thought I was walking into a group of people who basically accepted science at face value and then said, well, in the odd little nooks and crannies where there's still room, we're going to have our spiritual beliefs.
Right. Now, I mean, fundamentalist Christians love to talk about how there's a culture war going on in the United States, and I always say, I don't want to be at war with you guys, but if you guys are out to destroy me, then yeah, we're at war, because you declare war on me. But I don't think the war is between people who believe in God and people who don't believe in God. I think the war is between people who think that knowing stuff is good and people who don't. Between people who basically want to advance the cause of humanity by coming up with ways in which our lives can be better, and people who would rather say those people are elitists and we should throw in the towel when it comes to knowing stuff and you should just trust things that are spiritual wisdom.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
just a second.
Go ahead.
Responding to something Matt said earlier, I mean, yeah, it does certainly look like what they are most of all is uncritical,
yeah.
Right? They just, they're entirely focused, and I'm taking this guy, this first one speaker that I was able to stand, as pretty representative of where they're coming from and what they want to hear. His attack on logic and saying, basically, people like that which sounds good, therefore that's what's important. Sounding good is important. I think that's where they're coming from. And the best interpretation I can make of all this is not, you know, slightly better than my actual interpretation. I think, actually, they are engaged now in a campaign to destroy science. A slightly better interpretation that I could almost see is they are simply completely full of shit and uncritical and not really trying to accomplish anything but merely immerse themselves in a sea of notions that sound good.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
And you know,
boy,
lies are designed to sound good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was that Science and Wisdom's Alignment Project. There was no sign of any science.
No.
See, even the name includes a false premise. It assumes that science and wisdom aren't already aligned, that it's somehow unwise not to buy into science.
That was the first thing that came to mind when I heard that.
The premise was definitely, once I got there, the premise was clearly that religion's got the wisdom automatically by definition, and there'll be no discussion of that. And any time that people try to say there's wisdom coming out of science, they're wrong and bad.
I wonder if we could be a speaker.
I do plan on writing an email to the pastor of the church to let him know what my impressions were and
good.
But you know I think that's probably
we don't hope anything, but
yeah. All righty.
Wow. Quite an adventure.
It was scary. Couldn't believe it. I have for a long time considered liberal Christians to be themselves a big part of the problem, and because they continue to prop up the underlying assumptions that enable evil extremist fundamentalism to survive.
Right.
But I had, up until this point, kind of accepted them at their word when they said things like, you know, we agree with the findings of science. I'm not seeing that here. I'm just not seeing it. Okay.
That's a big fib.
Does anybody want to do a news before we go on? We have a bunch of listener mail, and Russell's done his. Matt, you want to do yours? Did you have a news? I can do listener mail for a minute.
Go ahead and do listener mail.
Okay. Right. Michael in Japan.
Wow.
Oh,
funny.
Oh.
That doesn't sound like a very Japanese name.
I think this is the same Michael that I've been having some really good conversations with. He's a great guy.
He wrote us a long letter. It says, I've been listening to the ACA and nonprofit shows. That he wrote to both of our shows, which was nice. Podcasts in the last year or so here in Japan. Yes, you have fans in Japan. I wanted to finally write and say thank you for all the tremendous work you've been doing in reaching out and educating people across the world. And he talks about his background. I can't read the whole
thing. We're educating? I thought we were merely being entertaining.
Apparently we're accidentally telling people things that are like useful to know.
He and I have similar background stories.
Uh-huh.
So cool. We connected a little bit that.
Is Michael from Japan?
No, his wife's Japanese. He's living and working in Japan now.
Okay.
But we've been having a little conversation back
so
and forth.
So it's not that he has big problems with the culture of Shintoism or something like that, I'm imagining.
I don't think that's the case.
In addition to writing to say thank you, I would also like to mention that I am a film media composer and would be interested in working up a theme song for either of your shows. No charge, of course. This is my way of saying thank you. I know you tend to feature several different musicians' recordings, but perhaps you've considered having something of your very own that will identify to you to the local community and the world at large. Sure, in theory. write some stuff and send it to us and we'll decide. I mean, I don't know how that works. If there's such a thing as doing, like, a sketch of what it might sound like so we can tell you if we like it, that'd be fine. Or however you want to work, dude. If you're a volunteer, there's no requirements we place on you.
Yeah, Jeff and I are artists, and so we can only refer to this in terms of art. Send us a sketch. Yeah, it's like, we don't know.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your letter, Michael. And sure, we'd love to hear some music. I mean, it would be great to have actual songs that we could claim were our own. Yes, Matt?
Speaking of art,
yeah.
And shameless self-promotion.
Yes.
We've mentioned before on this show, and I'll mention it again tomorrow, Russell and I are working, along with a lot of other people, on the ironchariots.org wiki.
Have we mentioned that enough?
We haven't mentioned it today, but I'm going to keep pushing it, because we're up to 30 editors. There's about 50 or so people registered on the forums.
Did you see I finally registered the other day?
Yeah.
And we're, things are coming along. There's a lot of different articles there. I've done a couple of long exposés on Way of the Master episodes, but we're trying to cover a whole bunch of topics. One of the things that kind of needs to happen is we're getting good content and lots of people are editing, but I wouldn't mind having some contributions of art, diagrams, pictures, things like that to make it look more, I don't know, pretty.
Yep.
So that you're not just going there and being confronted with this assault of text.
This mass text,
Because, a lot of subjects around philosophy and apologetics and everything can be kind of dry.
Yeah.
And they're not a lot of fun for a lot of people. So if there's anybody out there who's, artistically inclined, maybe, wants to do some kind of site design stuff or graphics, you're welcome to participate, too. You don't have to be an expert in counter-apologetics and an amazing writer in order to participate in the wiki work. So,
cool. Our next letter. Phil says, the BBC have a great liberal satirical radio program that also is available as a podcast. The Now Show it's called The Now Show, and the latest has a great Bob Dylan ripoff song, We're Striking Them Down in the Name of the Lord. It's a good comment on everyone claiming that God is on their side. The link to the podcast is, here we go, www.bbc.co.uk/.
How about just telling people to do a Google search for the Now Show? I don't think it ever really works to read a really long URL. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm halfway through now.
Yeah.
What do I do? /radio4/comedy/nowshow.shtml. It's also on iTunes. It's episode from June 29. And the song takes place at 23 minutes 45 seconds into the program. I would have extracted the relevant bits from the MP3, but I don't want to go breaching copyright after recent shows. Not sure what you can use under fair use. What could we use under fair use?
I'm sure you
if
can.
If people
use
want
all
to send us audio clips.
Fair use is a really vague thing. I mean, we do use it every week for intro music, and sometimes
right.
we've even played the entire song.
Yeah.
But usually it depends on how much you use and in what context, so it's muddy.
It would probably be okay, and if it's not, we'll catch that at our end. So feel free to send audio clips
like,
whenever you want.
You visit something like MediaMatters.org, and they've got like 10-minute clips of other shows on their site.
Right.
So I'm sure that it's pretty lenient.
Yeah, I was talking a minute ago about the long walkthrough I've done of a couple episodes of Way of the Master, and it occurred to me at some point, because I did a complete transcription of at least two of the episodes, that I might be violating fair use thing. I went and investigated, and of course, fair use includes criticism, comment, satire, parody. But because all of those videos are available at Google Video and YouTube Video, they've essentially become public domain because they're not actually charging for this.
Right.
And what would happen is if the people responsible for creating the material didn't actually put it up, they have to object, and then right. It would backfilter back down. But after a certain amount of time, it doesn't matter anyway.
D writes, how do you write God with a big G or a little G?
I usually refer to it as the God character when I'm talking about it.
Was that with a big G or a little G?
A little G.
Really?
It depends.
Because if I was talking about the Spider-Man character, I would use a big S.
It depends. My position is that if you're talking about God as if it were a name, like God said this, then you would use a capital G because it's a name. But if you're talking about a God or some gods, and I would agree with Dennis that you can get around capitalizing it by saying the God.
Right, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I never refer to the God directly by name unless I'm using a name, Yahweh or Jehovah
right.
or something
yeah.
like that.
Right, then capitalize that,
then
sure,
a,
yeah.
Then I'll give that a capital. Otherwise, it's the
letter.
God or your God or...
Right.
Right.
Okay.
But that's just us.
That's
this is
good.
Not atheist dogma.
I do think, though, I think if you... I think when Vernarian atheists...
dogma.
Yeah,
my personal view, if atheists talk about, God with a capital G, and it's not absolutely clear that we're only doing that, as a...
show of disrespect.
Taking it as, for the sake of argument, right, that could be misconstrued by Christians as us actually taking their imaginary friend seriously.
Right. And I absolutely do not capitalize him.
No.
Or
I have been known
crap.
To do that, but only ironically.
Right. Yes. Me too.
Yes.
See,
same here.
And I tend to do it a little bit different. I tend to try and follow the laws of grammar as much as possible, but if I'm writing in a particular context, like if I'm writing about what Christians claim, then I'm referring to a specific entity or a specific God concept, and then I'll capitalize God
yeah.
and him and whatever else, because you could substitute a name in there.
Yes, and I've written, humorous monologues ostensibly by God, and I would capitalize the word me.
Right, because that's funny.
But yeah.
On my City of Heroes character, Iron Chariot, where I have that passage from the Bible, it's possible to read that as Judah, right? It's Judah he's talking about. Judah was not able to defeat the people of the valley because they had chariots of iron. So I capitalized all the he's in that to imply it's God failing to defeat the people. God defeating the people of the mountains, but failing to defeat the people of the valley.
Well, see...
Because I think you can read it that way.
You could, except for the fact that... historically, if you were to look at it, it is Judah who was unable to do it.
Yeah.
But the very first thing is, and God was with Judah. So Judah, with
right.
God's help, could kick these people's ass,
right.
but with God's help,
right.
they couldn't
but
kick these.
To make it absolutely clear, I modified it. So it's God trashing the people of the mountains and the valley, and Judah happens to be hanging around. Okay. Because that makes the point better.
And also, I don't leave out the O...
I never do that.
Yeah.
There are so many reasons why it's stupid to bother doing that, even if you are a devout Christian.
Well, Christians would never do that.
Stupid.
That Christians would never do that. That is a specifically Jewish.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Christians would never
do
that.
No,
but I bet there are Christians who've seen Jews do it,
that
didn't understand why and started doing it themselves.
If they're willing to accept that there's this, supernatural being, I'm sure that they'll see somebody replace the O with a dash and think, oh, maybe I'm supposed to be doing that
respect,
now.
Right.
Because Christians automatically assume that anybody who's talking about God is talking about their God.
Their God,
they do it all the fucking time.
Right.
But it's a traditionally Jewish thing, and it's out of respect for, and it's the same reason why it's YHWH and no pronunciation.
Well, that I believe comes from the commandment that you shall not use the name of the Lord in vain, which a lot of Jews basically take to mean don't use the name of the Lord at all. Or some people think of that as a no swearing rule. But from what I understand from some of my humanities classes, what it really meant was, like, don't swear to God that you're going to do something and then not do it, because that would be taking it in vain.
And also,
it really
don't,
has nothing to do with right. bad language.
And also, don't attribute something to God unless you're sure that it was God who was responsible. You know, if you swerve through traffic and come to a safe stop without hitting anything, don't necessarily assume that it was the hand of God who guided you.
No Christian has read that passage for the last 500 years.
Apparently so. Or because, if your church falls down and no
right.
one is killed.
Yeah.
Wow. Derek says that Robert Ingersoll wrote, quote, "If I owe Smith $10 and God forgives me, that doesn't pay Smith."
Right.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
Jen in Colorado writes, and Russell, this was actually an email that you got independently and forwarded to the list.
Oh, yes.
Right?
I got messaged at work from somebody at a branch in Colorado who somehow looked me up on the internal company system.
Huh. Had you mentioned that where you worked so that they would know to look
I
at the internal company
I don't think I'm in
system?
The habit of mentioning where I work, but
huh.
I don't know.
Well, Jen in Colorado writes, "I downloaded Nonprofits and Atheist Experience to my MP3 player and listened to them at work. Sure, it's a no-no, and it makes me laugh for reasons no one else here understands, and occasionally it causes me to spew Diet Pepsi on my monitor. Be sure to thank Jeff for that 'people get angry when I just reach over and jerk them off' comment." Anyway.
Wow.
That was in reference to loving your neighbor as
right.
yourself.
Right. I know how loving myself works. Anyway, the show helps me keep my sanity in a place where the next guy to me uses screenshots from a Christian snuff film, Passion of the Christ, and other links, excuse me, and others think ID is science and just as valid as evolution.
Here's an aside.
Now we need somebody.
Kind of
somebody has
topic.
To send Dennis one of these. Are you the famous Dennis Lube emails?
Yeah. But if you take your diet, take a 2-liter bottle of Diet Coke outside and drop a bunch of Mentos into it.
Yeah.
Real quick, because you have about a quarter of a second before it turns into a 20-foot geyser.
We actually did that at work on 4th of July.
Oh, yeah?
Or around the 4th of July. Some guys. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
They took a, you know, of course, you know, you've seen it everywhere, and I think Mythbusters did it a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's insanely popular, but my favorite is the one where they emulate the water fountains in front of the Bellagio
yes.
with just a bunch of them.
Yes, and they had like about 100 bottles of...
It was just silly.
It was 700 Mentos. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So anyway...
Finally, Chris in Maryland writes, "Check out the Peter Popoff website." Note,
ooh.
Yeah, Peter Popoff
yeah.
is back. Note, the main page says on the top, "God is touching people or touching hurting people around the world." Well, maybe that's why
what?
They hurt.
How very odd. I wonder what he means.
We need to tell God, small g, to knock that shit off because it hurts. Also, for a good laugh, watch some of the testimonies or check out the Divine Transfer Kit where the cross comes with, quote, holy water and, quote, holy dirt from Jerusalem. I have no idea.
Holy
I have
dirt.
Some... Huh?
Holy dirt.
Batman.
I have no idea. I have some leftover pasta from last week that I could sell as holy pasta parts of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah.
Are you in? Keep up the excellent work. Thanks very much, Chris. Oh, by the way,
oh, wow.
there's...
You know, it's like... I heard a good one for people who do that face healing and stuff. How come we've never seen a limb regrown on stage? I mean, it's like...
There is a whole website.
Why does God hate amputees.com?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's fucking phenomenal.
That's great.
One thing,
everything else, but not that.
And with regard to the Flying Spaghetti Monster, what Chris doesn't know is that every week we do this show in full pirate regalia.
Arr!
We did a talk like a pirate episode. didn't we?
Yeah, like 4 years ago.
Oh, we'll have to do another one of those. When's Talk Like National, International Talk Like a Pirate Day?
I don't know.
We need to know.
When it's Talk Like a Frenchman Day, huh?
An issue came up with the listener email these last few weeks that I don't think we'll necessarily resolve it on the air. September 19. Hey, that's coming up.
September 19.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk. We're gonna have Talk Like a Pirate episode.
Okay, cool.
Okay, when you write to the show, when you send an email into the show, if you would be completely content with just getting an email response, please say so in your email.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, we will plan on, though not we're not always able to, we will plan on reading your email on the air. Because we've had some issues where there were some responses to emails that we got, and then the person who wrote has had a response in email, but then do we repeat it on the show? I just think it just feels a little awkward to me.
I don't see a problem with it.
You don't see a problem with that?
No.
I don't really have a problem with answering an email and answering on the show. But one thing I would point out is that if you don't want your email read on the show, you should definitely say that.
Yes.
Oh, that's probably a better point.
That's a definite.
I think the default position should be that we do.
Yeah, the default is going to be
that we're going to be willing to read it on the show unless you tell us.
You send it to us, you might hear it on the show.
But we can't make the claim that we're going to read everybody's email on the show.
And also, I make a practice when I'm reading the mail of only using people's first names, and if they give a location, I only use the state and not the city.
Yeah.
If you want more information about yourself than that, you are free to specify that you want more information than that said on the air. Otherwise, we won't.
Yeah, part of the confusion of this is that because I'm getting emails from the TV show, the radio show, the ACA board, the president at, and all these others, and they all get filtered to the same one, and I don't always look at to see where it came from. So
you
I'll
need
you know take a day.
I think
yeah, I'll just take a day and start answering emails and end up duplicating somebody else's efforts. So.
I think for me the thing is I'm very insecure, and I'm afraid that if the people who have written letters to our show, if they've already gotten a response, they're satisfied. They don't need to actually tune in and hear us hear the show because they've gotten feedback.
Well,
I don't think they like us so much.
I think
we can expect them to.
I think
they'll actually tune in hoping to hear it repeated on the air.
Yeah, so? they liked us so much that they not only listened but bothered to give feedback.
Yeah, when I get if I get an email from somebody who says I've been listening to the nonprofits for years, I don't think they're going to stop just because I answer their email. At least I hope they don't.
Yes, that is how the show works. You listen until you get an email from us, and then you're done. You can go away.
Your life is complete. You can die happy now.
Besides, I write stuff and then say it on the air all the time. That's one of the fun things about having a blog, is you can collect your thoughts and then you can deliver it later.
Yeah, but see, but if you sent an email in and you haven't gotten an email response, then it's an added reason to want to tune in.
Or it could be these guys don't care about replying to me. Why should I listen to their show?
I'm betting there's people who we have responded to on the air who just, you know, they didn't happen to ever listen again. And we responded to them, and they never heard it.
Well, then what do we care about them if they stop?
Yeah. If you're not listening to our show right now... Oh, wait.
Screw you. Wait a minute.
Okay. Events calendar. Dun-da-da-da. The 4th International Rationalist Conference is scheduled to be held on the 26th to 29th of December at New Delhi, India. Email conference at rationalistinternational.net for info. The ACA Town Lake Bat Cruise. The Atheist Community of Austin is chartering a boat cruise on Town Lake on Saturday, September 23rd. A bat cruise on Town Lake on Saturday, September 23rd, 2006, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll have the boat to ourselves to chat, picnic, and watch the bats emerge from beneath the Congress Avenue Bridge.
Are you guys going?
We're going. In fact, Matt, you're getting my money.
Okay.
You're a representative of the group, so...
That's good. I hope it's cash, because
it's
broke.
Cash.
Then I think we're going.
The boat has a bathroom and tables. We can bring food and drinks, but no glass containers. The price is $17.85 a person, which I think is entirely reasonable.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Please pay in advance with exact change, preferably in an envelope or with a check made out to ACA. Mark the check or envelope with the names of the participants. Give your payment to an ACA board member at any meeting or ACA event. And thanks to Joe Zemecki and Marla Repka for organizing that. Yeah, I think that's going to be cool.
Definitely. Did you mention that there's a board meeting tomorrow?
No, there's a board meeting tomorrow.
Just in case there's ACA folks listening.
You know, I have noticed that almost all the response that we get is from people outside of Austin. I don't think ACA folks listen to the show.
Oh, I know there's some.
Yeah. Can we get emails from actual local ACA members that pay attention to our broadcast?
I'll send you one right now.
No, it doesn't count. You're here.
How about
we are sponsored by the group and everything.
How about everybody who's listening right now who is an ACA member, make sure to drop us a short note this week.
Yes.
We'd like to know.
Okay. If you know of any events or groups or websites that you think deserve mention on our show, please let us know by emailing nonprofits@atheist-community.org. Okay. Matt, do you have your thing that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, well, there was a couple of news items that came out lately. One of them is about Francis Collins, who was a geneticist involved in the Human Genome Project, who's now a Christian. And he gave this interview to Salon.com.
Now a Christian? He wasn't before?
He wasn't before. He had a few epiphanies, like going up and seeing a waterfall that was divided into three segments, and that represented the Trinity and was convincing to him.
Wow.
The interview's interesting.
I have a hard time understanding how people who are that easily swayed managed to remain an atheist for so long.
By
not talking about it, man. By just not talking about it.
You know, he's a scientist. You can witness in the interview, you can see him using his scientific mind to address things, and then switching gears whenever he has to talk about religion. And P.Z. Myers at Ferengula, who most of us read and really admire,
just ripped him to shreds. He's a great source for us.
Yeah. He just ripped him to shreds because, you know, Collins was talking about how, you know, you couldn't use or shouldn't use science to address the question of the existence of God. And then in the interview, he turns around and does exactly that. He gives his scientific reasons for why he believes in God. So clearly, it's okay to use science to address the existence of God as long as your final conclusion is, you know, supported that God exists. And
right.
You shouldn't use science to disprove God because that might fucking be effective. So we need to avoid that. But,
and by the way, you can disprove any God that gives testable claims.
Well, yeah.
If an observation is required for a specific definition of a God to exist, and that observation isn't present, that God doesn't exist.
Unless they pick a testable claim that they already know to be true and then claim that's proof of their
right,
God.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, if God exists, then there
not
should
proof.
Be waterfalls that split three
ways. Yeah, right.
Or they can say, you're just not supposed to test him. Right. Which is the standard, standard Christian thing that you're not supposed to test them in the first place. So
even though we make testable things,
but even though we make testable claims, you're not allowed to test them.
Yeah, basically,
I'm serious, man. That is a standard argument.
But
you're
the
just
Christians
not allowed.
Say the universe exists, and that's proof of God.
Yeah, that's not a test.
It's a test. Does God exist? Give me evidence.
Is there
okay,
a universe?
Here's the test.
You're
is
right.
Is there a universe? Yes.
You're right.
Boom.
You're right.
And
yes.
They're testing God.
Their primary objection is to, like, active tests.
Oh, active.
Yeah, like, okay, God, if you're really there, strike me down with lightning. I can't count the number of times I've actively tested him, and he never does a thing.
Or there's also any time that that you actually require the God's cooperation in order to conduct the test. They can try to weasel out of that one.
Yeah, the arguments that convinced him, the anthropic principle,
but
the cosmological argument,
if
the
an observation is required by the definition of the God, it's required.
Right. Yeah, it's just not avoidable.
But he was convinced by the fine-tuning of the universe, the anthropic principle, the cosmological argument. He was convinced by C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, an argument from moral laws. You see, you've got, you know, arguments from ignorance of we can't know or understand how all this exists, therefore God must have done it. It's just...
That's insane.
It bothers me. One of the things I mentioned earlier, kind of as a sideline, was... how if, let's say, you avoid a traffic accident and you weave through cars and don't hit anything and end up on the side of the road. And there was somebody who had posted a story like that, saying that, you know, the hand of God came down and steered my car to safety. And it was a miracle, and God saved my life, and I just know that that's true. And when I heard that story, at first I was like, I understand, you know, in a way, how you could, through your ignorance, not understand how this process could occur naturally and therefore attribute it to a God. But at another level, what an unbelievably arrogant, asshole-ish prick thing to say. Because here you are driving through traffic, just an average person. You make no appeal to God. You're not praying. You lose control of your car, and because nothing bad happens, you think that you're so fucking important that God protected you. Meanwhile, there are billions of people around the world who are praying to some God or their God or the God that you think just saved you for food, cures, water, and he's doing fuck all to help them. And you think you're so special that he steered your car through traffic? That's just insane.
I remember actually something very specific happening to my wife when right after my son was born. She was out in a parking lot and holding my son, and she saw an accident occur in a nearby intersection where, I think I might not get this right, but a big truck crashed into a small sports car. The sports car went flying at them and stopped just a few feet short of them because it hit a sign. She, you know, this was shocking to all of us, but, you know, when she talked about it later, I think somebody on her message board said, God was protecting you, and her response was, it's too bad God couldn't have been bothered to protect the person in the sports car.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we move on? Are we wired to believe in a higher power? Almost every faith centers on a supernatural enforcer, an invisible power, a god, ancestral spirits, or karma, rewards those who follow the rules and punishes those who don't. Why do most religions have this in common? It's not inevitable, after all. A faith with a god who is indifferent toward people is simple to imagine, but it's much harder to find. Believers say their religion reflects divine will. That's the way God or something planned it. But a less theological explanation finds support from an experiment conducted at a British college psychology department. Maybe that common element of modern religions was the product of Darwinian evolution. Refreshments are sold on the honor system in the break room of the University of Newcastle. People who get a cup of coffee or tea are supposed to leave money. Researchers found that when they added a picture of eyes above the payment box, more than twice as much money was deposited, compared with weeks when the eyes were replaced by a picture of flowers. People were subconsciously triggered into acting more honestly, as if they were actually being watched, even though they knew the eyeballs were mere paper and ink. Those results, published last month in the journal Biology Letters, support a controversial theory that connects prehistoric humans to modern faiths. The theory says that so many of today's religions feature supernatural enforcers because of survival of the fittest. That sort of religion was most successful at prodding people into greater cooperation and honesty, which in turn helped their culture thrive, says the theory's supporters.
Interesting.
I'll have to look at that and read it, because I have an objection that this could be very, very, very flawed. And that is, the human mind is very adept at recognizing faces, and eyes are significant. And it may not be that putting eyes over the donation invoked any sort of feeling of being watched or anything. It may just have drawn more attention to the donation box than a picture of flowers. you know, and, oh, yes, maybe. I need to donate. And it's not necessarily that there's a subconscious significance to the eyeball over the flowers. It just may be that more attention is drawn because of that image.
Uh-huh.
That's so true.
Perhaps you could improve the test by putting a very large pair of eyes on a wall nearby or something.
Or what you need...
A couple buckets.
No, wait. All you need to do to fix that is to know... And it's a thing for getting drinks, right?
Yeah.
Know how many people took drinks and how much money is in the till. Then right.
That's what they
now,
did.
And
yeah.
Then you can extract, well, they're paying more often.
Well, the important thing is, just, is everybody aware? The important thing is everybody aware that they're supposed to give donations? If that's the case... Then there may be a significance to the eyes, but if you're drawing more attention to the donation box because of the image and not because of feelings the image evokes.
Yeah, did the donations go back down if they switched back to flowers? After all those people, if you're right, and all the eyes did was attract people's attention to the box, right? Then once they knew the box was there, the donations should stay about the same level. If they swap out the eyes for something else, because now they've learned.
There's a lot of induction here as to whether or not this is a test about somebody's honesty, or whether it's about a test of what draws people's attention.
Yeah. But interesting.
It's interesting either way.
This is exactly the kind of research that has to be done, so we can. I would love to.
And here we are questioning the results of an experiment that supports our contentions.
Yeah.
We're willing to question. Our own side.
And partly because I find it interesting either way.
Yeah, because we have introspection.
We've now seen an effect. Eyes cause people to donate more money. Now it's time to find out why. Is it because they're more drawn to that, or is it because they do have feelings that, you know, they're being watched or cajoled into donating?
Here's one more. I think we probably have time for this. Just something to piss me off before we go.
Cool.
Cleveland, Ohio.
On a high note.
A man accused of sexually assaulting 9 boys with physical or mental disabilities told a judge that having sex with children is a sacred ritual protected by his civil rights.
Wow.
Philip DiStasio, who said he is the leader of a church called Arcadian Fields Ministries, represented himself at his pretrial hearing. He is charged with 74 counts, including rape, pandering obscenity to minors, and corrupting another with drugs. Quote, I'm a pedophile. I've been a pedophile for 20 years. The only reason I'm charged with rape is that no one believes a child can consent to sex. The role of my ministry is to get these cases out of the courtrooms. DiStasio said some of his congregants are among the victims in this case. He is accused of molesting 2 disabled boys he tutored at his home and raping 7 autistic boys at a Cleveland school for special needs students, where he was a teacher's aide.
It makes it much more stark when he's insisting that they give consent, that they can give consent, and they're not only children.
Yeah, but also disabled and autistic. Yeah.
You know, I tend to think
is there more than one person in this religion? I think
him and the kids that he abuses should all be
rounded up. I mean, if that's one of their sacred...
No, the other members of the religion, he said, are the kids that he has been molesting.
That's it?
That's what he said.
Oh, so he invented his own religion.
Holy crap.
Okay, he said the victims are among the congregants.
Ah, okay.
His congregants are
I want to find out
victims.
Who his congregants are.
Some of his congregants are among the victims. That would imply there might be more. Okay. But it's not clear. DiStasio tried unsuccessfully in June to fire his court-appointed lawyer because the lawyer wouldn't pursue a religious freedom defense.
Yeah. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. So, once again, this is like one of my favorite issues. This you don't have to follow the law because you're a religious thing. Is just sick and wrong. This is, of course, an extreme case.
Yeah,
right.
He's going to go out on a limb.
There are lesser cases like Kent Hovind.
The fact that it's being tried at all just pisses me off. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful 14 days in the interim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.